evening, good morning, wherever you are. Welcome. Thank you for joining me this evening. I'm Dave Schrader, your host, at least for the next hour. We've been speaking with Brian in Fayetteville, North Carolina, on the wildcard line number 3. Brian, thanks for hanging in a little bit more. I wanted to hear a couple more of the tales that you were sharing from Okinawa and the experiences you had. Thank you very much for sticking with us for another segment.
Oh, yeah, not a problem, Dave. It's always a pleasure. Right, we're going beforehand. My wife used to work at a daycare center. The daycare center was across the street from this house. And creepiest thing that she ever told me was these kids kept on asking why the kids at the house can't come over and play. I mean, this was a big thing. And it wasn't until, I mean, this was when we first got there. And, you know, I was Buck Private Cross at the time. You know, I was just there. And, you know, she, you know, started asking the local national that worked at the same center, what's going on with this house? And they didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to say anything about it. And it wasn't until we really started pressing it. We, you know, did some research on the internet, found out that when it was first built, it was still in the military base. And the family that was in there, the father got a sword. This was the strange part. Decapitated his family and then impaled himself. They shut down the house for a good, like, 10 or 20 years. I don't remember. You can find out. You can actually Google it. It's on, like, a website. I don't know the website. I can't tell you off the top of my head at this moment. But they remodeled the house, reopened it, and the exact same thing happened, that the father of the house decapitated the family, impaled himself. After that, they brought in some Japanese monks, and this was, I'm guessing this was after the 40s. I'm not going to say yes or no, but I'm guessing it was after the 40s. And the Japanese monk said, completely seal the house off. The house is completely sealed up. We have pictures. We actually have pictures. And if you want, I can send them to you, but the doors are cemented. And everything is cemented. Like, there's no way in or out of the house. And they have, call me a bigot, but I call them magic post-it notes. It's the Japanese dongles they put on, the little prayer cards they put on with the writing. I mean, they just remind me of post-it notes. Sorry.
No, I'm with you. That's their, like, protection spells or so to keep whatever's
Like binding spells. So whatever they're trying to do is they're trying to really keep it in the house. But the creepiest thing that my wife ever told me was the children would always ask the other adults that worked at the facility, why can't the children over there come over and play? And there was never any children in the yard. Hairs. I'm just saying, hairs.
Right.
Straight up. And that's actually not the only time that I've ever had experience with ghosts. And I used to think my wife messed with me on this one. Back when I first joined the Army, I was in Fort Bliss, El Paso. I joined Air Defense Artillery. And we lived in one of they called them the historic red brick houses. And the first week we were in there, we had nothing. We had a mattress on the floor and our luggage in the living room. And you know, I was laying in bed, and my wife, she went to the bathroom, and she came out and she asked me what I was doing. I was like, laying in bed. You know, she's like, what are you doing in the living room? I'm not in the living room. And then she freaked out, ran into bed. We're gonna fast forward a little bit later. After a while, it's what's called a Diddy move. You do it yourself. I actually went down to, you know, where I lived, got all my furniture and stuff that I owned and actually moved to my house. And with that, my dog, a buddy, awesome dog, he was Dalmatian, thought he was people, but he would refuse to go down to the basement with everything in his moral fiber. He would fight. He was a baby. He was just a big baby. Like, that's what he was. He was the greatest dog in the world. He thought he was people. Like, you couldn't leave the house unless you had, like, cartoons on the TV, or else he would have a fit. Big baby. He would refuse to go down into the basement. And there were a couple times when I thought that I was messing with her because I'd, you know, get to go with some friends, we'd have a couple drinks, and then the next day something would be stacked up in front of the basement door. And there were times when I'd go out, you know, I'd have field exercises, I'd go out for like weeks, and it would mess with her head because there would always be something lined up in front of the basement door. Like, you never wanted to go down there. I don't know. It was just weird. And
lined up as though it was trying to block you from getting down.
Right. And buddy, he hated the basement. I mean, you know, we didn't like the basement either after. I consider myself a skeptic, but if a dog says I ain't going down there, I ain't going down there.
Fully understandable.
They can see and sense things more than we can. I'm just saying, dog says I ain't going. Cool, got you. We ain't going down there.
I don't know that I always take the word of a dog. They will lay there and lick their own butt for quite a bit of time.
Well,
so maybe they're not always the best choice for direction. But I get where you're going with that, right?
When they're fiercely adamant against going into the basement.
Right.
Just saying.
Yep.
I'm not going.
Well, Brian, keep in touch. And if you do have photographs, I'd love to see them. Email them to me at dave@darknessradio.com.
Oh, yeah, not a problem. I think we have some of those, the ones of Okinawa, because those were definitely, that's the strangest thing I've seen in years.
Please.
Leave it right there.
Shoot them over to me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'd love to see them, and we'll share them with the Coast to Coast audience as well and get them up on the website. Thank you for calling in, Brian from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast and more of your calls right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. If you're intrigued by the supernatural, the paranormal, the strange and bizarre, you can join me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight when I explore all of those topics and more on Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. You can find it at darknessradio.com. Again, from 9 to midnight. You can stream the show right from our website. And then stay tuned because Coast to Coast and George Norrie come on right after our show. That's Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time at darknessradio.com. And if you'd like to go out and investigate and see these things and places firsthand, go check out darknessevents.com or darknessradio.com. Click our events tab to find out where we can meet all over the United States and around the world. I'm going to be going to Scotland in the middle part of May here to get a chance to check out haunted castles, crypts, cemeteries, and get to visit Loch Ness. All that information and more is right on our site at Darkness Radio under the events tab. Tonight, we're taking your calls, open phone lines for the remainder of the show. Let's go ahead to wild card line for Christine in Michigan. Welcome to the show, Christine. What would you like to talk about?
Oh, I'm just going to share a couple of short stories with you real quickly about my experiences.
Please.
Worked at the world's largest state prison in Michigan, otherwise known as the Wall.
Okay.
And I worked third shift, which is usually pretty quiet, you know, because they're all sleeping, most of them. And this night I had to do building checks with another officer. And we had a little extra time on our hands, so we sat down, and my partner started telling me, oh, you know, this building's, you know, pretty haunted. And I said, I'm sure this whole place is. And within seconds, there's a metal detector at the entrance. The thing just start going off like people are going through it with metal in their pockets. Then, as he's telling me the story about this ghost that is named Chilly Willy.
Okay.
Yeah. It's this ghost that I guess likes to pull pranks. The red phone, which is an emergency phone in the supervisor's office, started going off like somebody had picked it up. And this is like just a one line that runs into the control center. Like if all hell breaks loose, you know, well, the phone was hung up. We walked up to the office, looked in the windows. We could tell that it was hung up, and unfortunately, we didn't have the key to get in there. But there was, you know, a little bit of hesitation in me because I was like, I've had some experiences before, but I'm ready to finish this check. Let's go. And with that, we were out of the building. But I also had a visit. My father had committed suicide 32 years ago yesterday, and it was pretty hard to take when you're 18 and a senior in high school and just ready to graduate, and that happens, but economic times are hard sometimes, and my mom was a devout Catholic, nothing a bashing of the Catholics or any other religion, but I had gone to bed and I had prayed about my dad because my mom had said, you know, he committed suicide, he's going directly to hell. I prayed for my dad, and it might have been about 6 to 8 weeks later, I woke up out of a sound sleep and my dad was standing right in front of me. And I always thought, you know, he'd be wearing a golden robe and have wings and a halo, and he was wearing a flannel shirt and the pocket was ripped and a pair of jeans. And I said, Dad, I started crying. I looked at the floor and he goes, look at me. I said, I can't. I should have got better grades. I smoked pot. You know, I was not the great teenager. I mean, I was good, but a little bad on the same. But he said, look at me. I love you. And when he said that, I felt it from the tip of my toe to the top of my head, that feeling of love. And I said, oh, God, Dad, I miss you. I miss you. And he goes, I want you to tell everybody three things. I love you all. I'm so very sorry. And in the end, everything works out. And with that, I ran up the stairs, and I tell my mother, I just seen Dad, and this is what he said. And she said, no, you had a dream. And I ended up in a psychiatric, you know, talking to a professional because she thought that I was having issues. And the psychiatrist says, no, I believe that you had a visit from the other side, and some people just can't accept it, whether it be out of their anger or religion or whatever. But I gave the total description of what my father wore that day, and I didn't see him that morning or that afternoon. As, you know, when it happens, they kind of, you know, shuffle everybody away.
Right.
But I had told my mom exactly what he was wearing. And it wasn't until 25 years later that my mother says, oh, about that, you were exactly right. Your dad was wearing that, and I'm sorry. I just couldn't accept it. So I think that's a lot of people have that kind of skepticism, and sometimes it takes a personal experience to kind of wake your eyes up.
I totally agree with you, Christine. Thank you, and especially for sharing such a deep personal story with us here tonight on Coast to Coast. I appreciate that. Let's go to Scott in Ontario. Scott, welcome to Coast to Coast. What's your story?
Thank you, Mr. Schrader, for having me on the show. I appreciate your time. Sorry, do you read me okay there?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay,
go ahead.
Cheers, thank you. I just wanted to commend you tonight on your coverage on technology and how we have to start questioning a little bit more about what we see, you know, with certain, you know, video editing technology, which is more just another form of illusion, as you probably know, is growing exponentially. And I've been saying for a long time now that video, I think, will soon join audio in the inadmissible evidence category in a court of law, because, you know, a lot of people can't even tell the difference now through the evolution of even just basic civilian technology, video games. You can see that it's starting to look the same. So I'm not sure. I caught the tail end of that particular segment. I'm not sure if you already had mentioned the ghost at the soccer stadium, which is a video that's about to go viral or is going viral at this time on YouTube. Did you mention that at all tonight?
Not on Coast, no, but you mentioned it earlier on Darkness Radio, talking about the case. And to me, I don't know, the jury is still out. That is, it's an amazing piece of video footage.
It's pretty amazing. And so, I mean, it's, you know, you mentioned, you know, video editing in general. I mean, we have Photoshop and we have kids playing with Photoshop just and becoming masters of it. But you also have the development of holograms. And there's been even from CNN to Disney to big theme parks, they're incorporating holographic technology now. And I've even heard to say that some universities have possibly theorized that they can actually get certain holograms to have mass. So a hologram that could appear and actually press the turn on and off a light switch or something like that. Now, I'm not sure if that is true. You probably would have more resources on that development. But talk about making people believe in ghosts on another level. This video editing technology, again, which is just another form of illusion, which is very popular among the elite, is probably way better than what we're talking about. We've got to remember that civilian technology typically is 100 years behind anything the upper echelon is working on as far as military. And, you know, I'm worried about that gap has increased to about 100 years we won't know about. You know, World War One, they had night vision goggles, but we didn't really get to see it until, you know, everybody had it on, were publicly aware about it until, you know, everybody had it on a feature on their video camera. So ultimately, I just wanted to commend you on bringing this light to issue because, you know, a lot of people can't tell the difference as far as what is on a piece of, what is a photo, to now even video. So I firmly believe that within my lifetime, video will have to join audio in the inadmissible evidence category in a court of law because you won't be able to tell the difference.
Well, there is some interesting, and thank you for calling in and sharing with us, Scott. There's some interesting breakthroughs, too. There is some very inexpensive software within a couple of $100s now that can be used to utilize photographic and video evidence so that you can actually run it through the software, and the software can detail what pixels are part of the original design and what is not, what has been added lately or later, so that people can exactly differentiate between the reality of what was videotaped and what was added on later. So I think as it progresses, we'll continue to see stuff that will be able to help us differentiate these frauds and hoaxes a little bit easier. Let's go west of the Rockies. Robert in Anchorage, Alaska. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left together in this segment. What would you like to talk about?
Well, first off, I think I got your answer. The answer to helping people believe, it starts with faith, just a tiniest bit of faith, and then their own personal experience takes it home. That's about the only thing that convinced people, I think.
I agree. You know, and you've got to keep that open mind to take a look at this. There's so many skeptics. And I when I say open mind, I don't mean don't be foolish.
Yeah.
You can't fall for everything that comes before you. But it's remaining open to the possibilities. And I think people mistake cynic for skeptic. Skeptic just asks questions. A skeptic, I think the world needs more of those. Cynics, Jesus Christ himself could walk into the room and start passing out loaves and fishes, and they would think somebody tainted our Kool-Aid or pumping some kind of funny gas in the air. I don't think you'll ever change a cynic's mind, but a skeptic is somebody that just asks the right questions and continues to push till they can understand more about what's going on. Have you had experiences throughout your life, Robert?
I truly have. I have seen at a very young age, from the age of 5, I've had several experiences. The same angel has saved my life at least 3 times in my life. It's kind of moving, even thinking about it today. This memory has been with me my entire life, and I've never doubted it. I've never questioned it. I've always had questions and wondered and been amazed by it still right now. I don't know how else to put it, just in awe of the experience. I was about, like I say, I think it was 5 years old, walking home from kindergarten, you know, and back in the early 70s, that's, you know, they just let the kids walk home from kindergarten.
Sure, I remember.
Yeah, and anyway, I fell in a creek, a frozen creek in Wisconsin. It was pretty cold. I remember laying in that creek as frozen as I could be, looking up and seeing the most beautiful golden hair, golden skin, just almost translucent white clothing. Just, it was amazing. She's standing on the side of the creek telling me I have to get up, that I have to move. And I was asking for help. I was begging her for help, but she told me she couldn't do it, that I had to do it. She walked me the entire half mile home, every step of the way, but I'm always asking for help. I can remember asking and begging for her to carry me or help me. And she said I had to do it myself. Right up to the doorstep. I even asked her to push the doorbell because I couldn't do it. I was so cold. I was frozen head to toe. And, you know, the 7th of 8 kids, one or two of them wanders away. You don't exactly notice, but she wouldn't push the doorbells. I had to do it myself. I kicked the door a few times. My mother opened the door, and there I was.
Amazing story. Robert, stay on with us. I'd like to hear your other angelic encounters. We'll continue with open phone lines right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Robert in Anchorage, Alaska, are you still there with me?
I am, sir, and thank you for having such incredible energy through this whole night. You're an outstanding guest host.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. I'll be back on Coast to Coast May 30th and May 31st. So thank you very much for the encouraging words. Let me hear you. Now, you said you've had an angelic encounter three times. You told us about the first time, and you said when you got to that door, you kicked that door, your mom opened up the door. What happened to the woman who had escorted you all the way home?
She was gone.
Just gone. No sign of her, nothing. Bam.
She was gone. I saw my mother. I looked around. Nobody was there but my mother.
Did this angelic ever touch you at any point?
No. Not at all. She just beckoned me and told me, she talked to me, told me I had to do it my own. I had to do it all on my own. That she couldn't help me, that I had to do it, that I had to keep moving. And I was hypothermic by the time I got home. I was, you know, covered in literally ice, sheets of ice on my skin. It was, you know, probably 0 degrees, middle of the Wisconsin winter. Not as cold as it gets.
Yeah, amazing tale. Strange as it is, I grew up in Illinois myself, and not too far removed from the winters in Wisconsin. And I also went through ice on a small lake. There was a hockey stick out there begging for me to go get it. And I scooched myself across that, and I grabbed the hockey stick, and in a classic movie moment, I held that stick up over my head and in righteous indignation and excited. And I'm like, yeah. And the next thing I know, whoosh, I'm under that ice. And I held that stick. The stick hit the top of the ice, and I was holding the stick. And there's no explaining the pain your body feels in that kind of cold water. And I literally just froze, and then I felt something dragging the stick, and I came up over the top of the ice, and I laid there freezing, and then my friends came running out and slowly dragged me back using the stick. Somehow the stick had pulled me back up out of the ice and was leaning up close enough for them to not have to get out on the ice with me, and they were able to grab it to drag me back. So it really touched me that you had a story similar to that, going through the ice and having something help you. So fascinating. What was your second encounter with the angels?
My nickname was Boomer. Of the seventh of eight kids, I was kind of always, you know, bouncing off of something. It was just a couple years later, six or seven, and I was playing out in the barn loft up above, you know, where they used to load the hay. It wasn't being used anymore. The barn was out of order. And I was told, don't go play in the barn. It's not safe. Of course, you know, that's where I went.
Sure.
Straight up to the loft, and I fell out the loft door, a good 20 feet up. I was hanging at first. I tripped, and I fell, and one of the hooks caught my boot, and I'm sitting there hanging, and I looked down below, and there she was again, the same woman. This same woman was right below me. She's telling me just to let go. It'll be okay. You'll be safe. You'll be fine. Just let go. She kept telling me to let go. I mean, I was caught by my boot. I didn't think I was holding on, but I just kind of relaxed myself, and I fell and got up. I was fine. It wasn't quite as climactic as the ice, but it was still just as moving. She was there. She was real. She was there. As beautiful. I've never seen anything in my life as incredibly awe-inspiring with beauty. Not physical, she's a pretty woman beauty. Like the kind of beauty that you can really only find in your dreams. The kind of beauty that comes from, I don't know, in your soul.
Yeah, it transcends just the physical attributes of beauty, and it is something that just exudes like a magic. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Now, did she have any physical contact with you at that point?
I didn't think so. I don't remember her grabbing me, but she told me I would be okay, and she had her arms out. She kept telling me, just relax. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. You'll be fine. Just relax. And I did, and I was okay.
And when you came down and hit the ground, was she there when you made it down?
No. When I got up, she was gone. Absolutely gone.
And what was your third and final encounter?
Well, this is really the third time I saw her. I've had other experiences where I felt her, but the third encounter with her, I had found my way. I was, like I said, kind of a rambunctious kid. I was the one that mom had to take alone. She could take all seven, or she could take me to the grocery store, to the church, whatever. I found my way into the medicine cabinet and found some sleeping pills, and I ate the whole bottle. Candies, right? You know?
Wow.
Yeah. I remember my mom. It was just me and my mom and my little brother at home. And my little brother was a couple years younger than me, but we were the only ones at home. It was during school that day or wherever it was. Everybody else was gone. I imagine it was school. I remember her feeding me coffee and walking me around the room. And again, that woman, a beautiful angel, she's sitting in a chair just watching me with the most loving look, the most incredibly warm. I'm almost crying here. It's really that incredible. We're just remembering her face, her glow.
Did she give you a sense that it was going to be okay?
Yeah, she didn't speak that time. She just was looking at me with the most incredible love I really ever experienced. And I worked out okay. I'm still here. No brain damage. No, or, you know, at least most.
Well, the jury's still out on that, Robert, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Did you ever have physical contact with this being at all?
I never saw her again after that. But I've had, like I said, I'm a guy that bounced off of walls. So there was an accident. I was maybe 15, a couple of buddies and I, skipping school. One of them took his dad's car. I'm not wearing a seatbelt. No, you know, this is maybe 80s. Nobody's wearing a seatbelt. He rallied around a corner at about 50 miles an hour, probably doing a good 35, 40 when we hit the telephone pole.
Ouch.
He was, nobody died. The passenger in the back was launched up into the windshield of the car. The guy in the driver's seat broke a couple ribs, broke the steering column of the car. I felt like I was being held. I didn't have a scratch on. I didn't even like launch forward. I felt safe. The instant we hit that, I didn't even block my hand on the dash. I felt safe, just like I was being held.
Amazing stories, Robert. And I hope you've taken the gift that you've been given repeatedly and do something really big with your life, because there's a reason for you to be here.
I've been saying that my whole life. I don't know if it's my son, my one and only son. I give him every bit of my heart that I can. I don't know how else to do it. I agree with you. There's got to be some reason that I'm still here and breathing, because I've been saved more times than I can count.
Your job is to share the stories and let the world know that we're not alone and that there is something greater than what we are. And there is a grand design to this. Thank you so much, Robert, for hanging in with me and sharing those amazing encounters. We're going to take our final break of the evening. When we come back, we've got Pam and Michelle on hold. We'll get to you and see how many other calls we can get through in the next segment. Stay tuned. There's more Coast to Coast AM to come right after this. With us today, once again, is a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM, the author of the best-selling book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box. Folks, let's welcome Coast to Coast guest Ty Bollinger.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Ty, people are excited about Carnivora. That's C-A-R-N-I-V-O-R-A, carnivora.com. Now, what's causing all the excitement?
George, immune monitoring studies conducted in Europe more than 25 years ago reported that immune system exposure to Carnivora causes immune modulation to occur.
Why is immune modulation so important when using carnivore?
That's a great question, George. Successful immune modulation means the difference between staying healthy or allowing abnormal cellular growth to occur. Now, I've been using carnivore myself for just about a year, and I fully expect to keep abnormal cells from knocking at my door.
So once again, Ty, this does prove that our immune systems can be awakened to create powerful immune defense by attacking harmful invaders that simply don't belong in our bodies.
That is absolutely correct, George.
Very interesting information from Coast to Coast guest Ty Bollinger. Thanks again, Ty. Visit carnivora.com. That's C-A-R-N-I-V-O-R-A. Call 1-866-836-8735 and order now. That's 1-866-VENUS-FLY.
Call 1-866-836-8735. Call now.
What's the best way to bring people together?
T-shirts!
T-shirts. Custom T-shirts that you design online with Custom Ink. Custom Ink has created over 30 million shirts for families, teams, reunions, church groups, cheerleaders, companies big and small. On-time delivery is guaranteed, and we'll even ship your order absolutely free.
Start designing your Custom Ink T-shirts today and see why 99% of our customers say they would order from us again. Visit CustomInk.com.
We are back on Coast to Coast AM, and it's time to take me down to Paradise City. Michelle in California, Wildcard One, welcome to Coast to Coast. What's your story for me?
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking this call. I thought I would share a story that it's not spooky or scary.
That's fine.
It was kind of cool, but I was kind of privileged to be a guest at a spiritual ceremony, Native American, in the Thousand Oaks area, and it occurred on a hill. It was an area where there was a lot of open space, and there was a hill which was kind of designated as a sacred area that could not be developed. And in the distance, there were buildings and things, you know, kind of out quite some distance from where this occurred. And I met the cousin, a man named Michael. I met the cousin of the gentleman that was doing this. It was a sacred bear dance, and the man's cousin was named Michael, and I had met him for the first time. And as kind of a spectator and the person who helped, I stood on the outside of the circle, and Michael was, you know, maybe about 4 feet away from me. And during this ceremony, I heard very clearly what sounded like male voices. It sounded like there could have been 4 or 5 male voices not too far from us behind where we stood. Their voices were muffled, so you couldn't make out specific words that they were saying. And I immediately turned and looked behind me because I was startled. There was no way anybody could have come anywhere near where we were without us seeing or hearing them come, whether it would be by vehicle or walking. So it was immediately strange. And I turned and looked behind me, and the edge of this hill, the voices sounded like they were right at the foot of the hill, just beyond where we could see, and it was just a short walking distance to get there. So I looked in that direction, startled, and then I looked back, and I noticed that Michael was looking at me, looking at this in the same direction. We both, without saying a word, we both immediately walked over to where we believed the sounds were coming from. And when we got to the edge of the hill, no one was there. And no one else in this circle had heard it except the two of us. And I looked at Michael and I said, "Did you hear what I heard?" He said, "Yeah." And he said, "Don't let it worry you. When you know, ceremonies like this occur, it's not unusual for the old ones to come and to be there." And he said, "It's a good thing." So that was the end of it. It's not some huge thing, but the thing that was interesting about it is that I felt vindicated in a sense, because I didn't just hear something on my own. This other person heard exactly what I heard. We both reacted at that very moment without saying a word. And it was just kind of an interesting thing. And there have been other things in my past that I've experienced, but that one in particular stands out because I was not alone in what I experienced. So I thought I would share that tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. I appreciate that. Great story. Thank you for calling up and being a part of the show this evening. Let's go to Wildcard Line 5, Sherry in Kerrville, Texas. Welcome to Coast. What's your story?
Hi, Dave. Well, this is kind of like Michelle's. It's not really spooky, but it involves quite a few people. I was in college in Austin, and this was in the 80s, and you had to find something to do that wasn't very expensive, but yet, you know, was fun. And my brother and I got involved in crewing for hot air balloons. And during the spring, a lot of the pilots, you crewed for different ones if they needed it. And what would happen is if you crewed and there was a spot on the balloon and it was your turn, they would let you ride. The very first time I ever got to ride in a balloon, it was just north east of Austin in Hutto. It's a very small community, and you can launch the balloons, and depending on which way the wind is blowing, you've got to get up very early, like about 4:30 in the morning, and you launch about 6 o'clock in the morning. And the pilot obviously, you know, has those paying customers. And you get and there's a crew that in a car that will follow the balloon. One will ask permission from a property owner to land the balloon, you know, if you're going to land on someone's property. Well, I got to get in the balloon, and it was my first ride, and I was so excited. And, you know, we lifted off, and the sun was coming up, and it was so beautiful. It was like riding in an elevator. You got that kind of little, your stomach kind of left you. Well, as we were coming to the end of our flight, we passed over this cemetery, and you can see, you know, the horizon, everything. And I noticed there were these kids, and it was like two girls and a boy, or two boys and a girl. I'm not really sure, but they're running through the cemetery, and we were looking at it, and a few of us were mentioning, well, you know what? Those kids have not been taught very good manners because they're running across the graves. You know, I was always taught, you know, you don't step on the actual grave. You know, you kind of go around the sides.
Right.
And we started looking around, and it was like, well, where's their parents? And then it was like, okay, there's no houses around here. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, well, did they have bicycles, or there's no cars around? You know, who got them out there? And we were getting ready to land, and I can't remember this particular pilot's name, but she's radioing the crew, and she was like, do you guys see a car or anything around there, down there, as you're coming up on the cemetery? And we heard back, nope. And they said, do you see these kids that are down there? And they're saying, no, there's not any kids. There's no bikes. There's nothing over here. And that was pretty much the communication she had with the crew. And we land, and they're coming up, and we're like, we wanted to immediately, all of us that were in that balloon, immediately wanted to just go back to that grave at the cemetery and look for these kids, because we realized, what the heck did we just see? And to this day, I still don't know whether they were really kids, but then they just, like, disappeared. Right before we landed, it was like, well, where did they go?
Did just gone into thin air.
Yeah, it was like, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. And it was, it just gave me goosebumps. And we were all just going, did you see that? Did you see that? Yes, I saw that.
And when you think back to it now, did they move faster than you think they should have? Was there anything ethereal about them? Were they full corporeal, three-dimensional, fully realized figures? Or was there something off about them?
That's just it. The one, I don't remember if it was two girls or two boys and a girl. I do remember one girl with long, dark hair, and she had a dress on. You know, like, you know, kids that were going with their parents to visit. It was a Saturday. It was a weekend, and I thought, you know, they were going to go visit. And, of course, you know, kids don't want to stay with the parents when,
right,
you know, they're visiting someone. But, yeah, they were just running across, you know, in between the tombstones, you know. It was just, I don't know.
Did you ever go back and take a look to see if there was a set of children's graves?
we went back there, there was nobody out there, you know. And it wasn't that big of a cemetery. And, you know, at first we were just going, oh, you know, those kids just have no manners. Where are their parents? And then we just realized, well, wait a minute, you know, are there any cars? We're in a balloon. We can see everything for miles.
Right.
And that was just weird. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much for tuning in and listening to Coast AM this evening and for giving us a call and being part of the show. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you to callers Anna in Los Angeles, Donnie in Wisconsin, Jamie in San Diego. I'm sorry that we ran out of time this evening. I will be back to host Coast to Coast AM on May 30th and May 31st. So hopefully you'll give us a call and share your stories with us on open phone lines on Friday, May 30th. And we'll make sure to get you in first and foremost. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of the world with me this evening. I want to take a few seconds to thank my guests from Hour 1 and 2, Joe Augustin. He is the writer of Ghost Writer, The Polaroid Ghost. You can find that on Amazon.com. Bill Murphy from sci-fi TV channel show Fact or Fake, The Paranormal Files. Check him out at ghosttown.tv. That's ghosttown.tv. Special thanks go out to producers Tom Danheiser and Dan Galanti for guiding me through this mission this evening. Lisa Lyon, our engineer Tim Dennis, and of course to the big man for allowing me to sit in this evening. Thank you, George Norrie, and thank you all for tuning in. I'm Dave Schrader. Check out my website and visit me at darknessradio.com.